You're listening to the Clutter Fairy Weekly, a weekly webcast and podcast brought to you by the Clutter Fairy in Houston, Texas. If you'd like to participate in one of our live webcasts, please visit cfhou.com/weekly. You'll find a calendar of upcoming webcasts, as well as instructions for joining the Zoom meeting via the app or by phone. We'd love to see you. That URL again is cfhou.com/weekly. Now here's the weekly episode. Enjoy!
Hi, Clutter Fairy fans. This is the Clutter Fairy Weekly for April 23rd, 2024. I'm your co-host, Ed Gumnick, and I'm speaking with Gail Goddard, certified professional organizer and owner of the Clutter Fairy in Houston, Texas.
Hi, everybody. The Clutter Fairy Weekly is a webcast and podcast that digs deep into the clutter that piles up between you and the life you want to be living. We explore the habits and behaviors that lead to clutter, and especially today we're going to do that. And we suggest strategies to slow the accumulation, reduce the collection, and comfortably manage the stuff we decide to keep.
If you're new to our Zoom meeting, we want to let you know that you can share your comments and questions via the chat, and I'll try to make sure Gail addresses them before we move on to another topic. You can also use the raise hand feature if you'd like to ask a question or make a comment yourself via audio or video. And we're streaming the webcast live on Facebook, so you can ask questions and make comments there as well, and I'll relay them to Gail. We're going to start, as we usually do, by following up on last week's weekly tittle, which was called Emotion into Motion. The assignment was to confront a negative emotion that complicates or interferes with your decluttering or organizing process. We'd love to hear from our participants in Zoom and on Facebook who experimented with our emotional tittle this week. Please let us know in the comments. I searched high and low on YouTube and Facebook and our own website comments and found zero tittle reports on this topic, which makes me think
no one wanted to share.
maybe people struggle. Wait, I guess I could conclude that no one struggles with negative emotions in their decluttering process.
Right. And it's all fine.
I don't think that's it. I think it might.
I think that's a false assumption.
It might be that this is an area of difficulty for a lot of people still, in spite of all of our great advice that we gave last week. Gail, did you walk a client through any emotional struggles this week in your work?
I did, actually. I have a client who, due to a fire in the house, so they actually had to move out and renovate a house that caught on fire. And now they're living in another space. And then the husband has a health challenge that requires 24/7 health care in the house. And so the combination of those things meant that my client is really behind managing paperwork. And she has an office that's full of, you know, the last 3 or 4 years worth of paper. And she finally cried uncle and called me to come and help. And we had an experience this past week where she picked up I found in amongst a bunch of supplies, office supplies, a deposit stamp, you know, a stamp that you endorse the back of a check with it. And so it has the business name and it has an account number and stuff like that. And so I handed it to her and said, here's a deposit stamp. Is this account still valid? Is this still part of your office supplies? And having handed her the stamp and asking that question, she flipped it up so she could see the name on it. And just reading the name on the deposit stamp brought up a really emotional response for her. And then she started telling me the story. And it involved her family and the breakdown in relationships between her and her siblings related to inheriting property. And how they did all of this and lawyers and yada, yada. And it was a very long involved story. And the end result was, and so we formed this corporation with our family, with us and our kids, so that they wouldn't have this problem later. But she went back so far in the story, like it triggered such a long emotional journey for her, and it made her cry in the middle when she was talking about it.
Wow.
And she couldn't, I asked a couple of times because it took 20 minutes for her to circle it back to what that had to do with the deposit stamp. And I asked a couple of times in the middle, so, but why are you telling me the story? What, how does this relate to the deposit stamp? And she would just, keep telling the story. So it was a 20-minute story, and she was clearly distressed by it. As she told the story, it made her cry in the middle and cry at the end, and it was all sad emotions. It was all about something that really went wrong for her family, and she was very distressed about it. And I don't tell this story to diminish her emotional response about it, but I think it's a perfect example of how your emotional response around something can completely shut down the process. Because even though I was there with her and I prompted her a couple of times to tell me what this has to do with the stamp. Why is the stamp making this story happen? Like, I kept trying to get to the place where she would see that she could shortcut the story for me and get back to work. And she couldn't. I just, after attempting a couple of times, I realized I can't, we have to stand still until she's through all the way
Processing.
through this
Yeah.
process, and at a, what is a natural stopping point for her. And it took, 20, 25 minutes for her to get through the story. And so as an organizer, I want to be helpful and be doing something, but in that moment, it wasn't appropriate for me to tell her to stop feeling something, right? Like,
Right.
that wasn't the result. That wasn't the right answer. And so I just sat quietly with my hands in my lap, listening to her and acknowledging the emotion she was going through. And she finally got to the end and said, and this stamp is the business, this is the business name, the body, yada, yada. So sometimes, very honestly, the emotional response, the memory for her, it was that, she had a long, involved, several year experience that involved destroying ties with her siblings over this piece of property and lawyers and all kinds of, mess. And this was just a window, that little stamp was just a window that touched that big old long memory. And so I need to go back to her later and say, clearly this is an event that took place that was a problem, that was hard for you, and you still feel a lot of emotions around it. And so, is there some way that I can help you deal with the clutter, that the mail that comes up around this business, without sending you, triggering that huge full response so that you can't keep moving, and ask how I can help her with that?
Yeah.
Because it was very derailing for her. And it was, and there was a point where it was like, sometimes I can help them pause and step away from the emotion again, so that while during our working appointment, we're working. But sometimes I just have to let you be in your space until you're done being there. So,
Yeah.
it if it's that strong, and I think that everyone has something in the house around which they have that big emotional trigger, shutdown. They go off into memories about something that makes them really unhappy, and that's how the emotions shut down the process. You can't keep going because you're swimming in that memory and that emotion, and it really is very, very distracting. And so, A, happens to everybody. B, don't judge yourself about it. It's perfectly normal. And C, acknowledge that this is kind of an issue. This is a way that you get tripped up, and see if there's ways that you can desensitize your like, separate your emotional response about what's going on from the objects themselves in the that are in front of you. And it may be that the only way to do that is to, like, I can't sit in this instance, I may not be able to sit with a bunch of mail from that business. I may have to sit with, five pieces and then go do something else,
Yeah.
and then come back and do five more pieces and go do something else. Like, I may have to give really frequent breaks for her to be able to make little incremental progress on the piece that is the most triggering for her, because there's plenty of other mail in there.
Right.
So there's a lot to work. Well, there's lots to work on, and so I'm gonna try also task switching,
Yeah.
and do it really frequently so that maybe she can not lose the appointment time that she set aside to work on this stuff
Right.
by sort of going down that rabbit hole again. So there, that was a long version of yes, emotions, negative emotions sometimes shut you down from organizing completely.
M says, I wanted to do the tittle, but was involved in the negative emotion of terror that the landlord would have to come into my house for an emergency repair. As a result, the bathroom is restored to order, plus the food pantry is organized. The landlord didn't have to come in, by the way.
Oh, well.
But she goes on to say, in the process of the emergency cleanup, I started discovering the emotions that caused the clutter in that area, so hope to work on the tittle as a next step.
That's interesting. And it's also, you recognize that the fear of the landlord coming in was a big enough negative emotion to get you in motion and to get you to do something, which I think is interesting to notice. There's a negative emotions that stop you, and sometimes there's negative emotions that trigger you to move. And for you, the landlord was one of those negative emotions, like, oh God, I'm afraid he's coming, therefore I need to clean this stuff up. And so you went and did a bunch of motion in there and discovered the next steps for you, like why there's some processing to be done about why those spaces got filled up to begin with. So very cool. That's a good thing to learn and a good next step to go for. I hope you do a little bit of thinking on that and come back and tell us what you figure out. That's great.
Naomi asked Gail, do you ever refer a client to a therapist
Yes.
instead of working with you, or just in addition to working with you?
Usually in addition, usually I'm asking, because I need to acknowledge that although a lot of the work that I do seems therapeutic, and some clients laugh and say that I'm their therapist, that's really just a function of people end up telling me a lot of stories about their life. And so I'm sure it feels like therapy. But in that process of unpacking the stuff, I also unpack all of the things that contributed to the stuff. And so I run across and trigger in the work that I do all of the stories that are unresolved for people. Usually that clutter reflects your mind, right? And so what is unresolved for you gets reflected in the room. And so when I find something that is so strong and so powerful, and what I consider to be so unresolved for someone, that is still a very fresh wound, regardless of the time or that's gone by or what it's about. If it's something that is really still what feels to me like unprocessed, like you haven't made any peace with it for yourself, it's still actively swirling around in you, causing trouble, then I will ask, do you see a therapist? Have you ever considered seeing a therapist? This seems to me like something that's not finished for you and is causing you a lot of heartache. And maybe it's time to go support yourself with some professional processing. If you've talked to your friends about it and talking to your friends hasn't brought you any relief, then, and time going by hasn't brought you any relief, then maybe it's time to go and deal with it with someone that is, at a professional at unraveling these kinds of jumbles and helping you get to a healthier place about it. I don't want to be the one that in a minor way for somebody that is already processing, dealing with something, or if the emotional response is really, judgment about themselves, just in general. I'm such a disaster. I can't manage this stuff. I'm so let, you know, when people start talking smack about themselves, I have no trouble with stepping in and going, no, that's not what's going on here. And I will, coach people to see it from a different point of view. But there are stories that come up that are absolutely unfinished business, and it's not my business to finish for them because I'm not the expert that they need. And so
Yeah.
I'll still work with people, but I will suggest that they could use some more targeted professional support. And that actually happened with a client that I have that's in England that I do virtually. And I referred her to a therapist really early on. And so she started seeing the therapist virtually and seeing me virtually at the same time, like, different appointments. And it made a huge difference for her. She really needed the support to talk about stuff and not be working on something while she was talking about stuff. And so it was an added layer of her ability to cope with what was going on in her life, and it made a big difference. So that was an instance where I referred her and she took my advice and it worked out. So not everybody takes my advice, not everybody feels comfortable with therapy, but I think it would be helpful to help somebody get to the other side of a pain point. I absolutely do refer them and, suggest it to them gently and then leave them to deal with it how they will.
All right, we'd better get on to our main topic. We have
Oh, sorry.
lots to cover, and that's
Okay.
okay. That was a good question and a really interesting answer. Some spaces and categories of stuff in our homes are relatively easy to declutter and organize, but some are constant sources of struggle. What lessons can our sweet spots teach us for managing our trouble areas? Today, we're going to explore your household problem spots and clear zones and offer strategies for working toward a whole house that's a clutter-free sweet spot.
Let's start with a couple of quick definitions. What we're calling a problem area obviously is a space in your home, a particular collection, or category of stuff that regularly challenges your ability to declutter and organize. But what do we mean when we call something a sweet spot? The sweet spot. Sweet spot is a term that you hear a lot in various sports. It's the part of the tennis racket or the baseball bat where you'll get the most beneficial impact when you hit the ball. But the term is also used as a metaphor in a lot of other contexts, and where a sweet spot is defined as a particular set of conditions that will achieve the most desirable or effective outcome. And that's how we're going to use that term today to describe areas or collections where you've managed to create an optimized set of conditions, rules, or limits for managing and preventing clutter. Now let's talk about the problem areas and the issues that you reported to us in the survey first. I'm going to run through a list of people's reported problem areas. Fee says she can manage the current mail, but hasn't managed to allocate the time to work on the mail backlog. Those are definitely separate projects. And managing the mail is one thing because it's, the 10 pieces that came today, but the backlog is another big project, right? Leslie says she's got to stop shopping for craft supplies. That shopping is her new hobby instead of crafting. And there's some factors around she has limited time and that kind of stuff. But I definitely have friends for whom the fun is buying the supplies and not actually using the supplies. And so I would encourage you to the next time you want to go shopping, to go start a craft. You don't have to finish it, but you can go and sit and play with the stuff that you have or organize the crafts that you have. Don't try to do something or shop for something. Just go and organize them. Jennifer says her storage unit is the problem because going offsite to work is a hassle. That's definitely true. And there isn't much space to work in the storage area either. And her work schedule prevents her from going for a sufficient amount of time. If you make the trip offsite to go to the storage unit, then going and being there for an hour and turn around and leaving again, like that seems like a waste of time, right? So because you've got travel time on either end, so you when people go to the storage units, they usually want to try to be there for a while, and if you can't do that, then it feels like a waste of time. And storage units are the definition of out of sight, out of mind, right? It is definitely off site, and so it is not there to poke you every day, and in the meantime you're spending money to ignore it. Summer says I procrastinate with photos because it's so emotional and she's unsure what she wants to do with them all. Yeah, I totally get that about photos. And I would tackle the photos without an end goal in mind right now. Like get into the photos and just go through and try to sort them and pull out ones that you don't care about. Just try to thin the collection. And as you fondle them and you see what photos are there and you start putting them in categories and I think that what you want to do with them in the end will evolve and come to you as you manipulate and handle what you've got. So Don't worry that you don't know what the end result is. Just go and play with the photos and do some organizing and sorting and get yourself in motion around it and see what comes out of that.
I think everybody who tells us in survey responses that, or you know, just in the course of these webcasts that they've got a big, scary, ugly photo project to work on, they often are looking for the end point to be clear at the start. You know, I want this to be one album full of photos, or I want this to be, you know, one neat little box. And it's hard to get from where you, the chaos where you are to that idealized
The one neat little
solution.
box, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's
There
true.
are a bunch of steps left out.
Yeah, from A to Z, right? Yeah, I think that's important. And sometimes we don't start an organizing project because we don't know how it's going to end. It's like, well, you can still get some work done, even though you're not quite sure where you're going to go. But you can still thin the herd and sort the contents and get a better idea of what you got. And that often informs the solution later, that it makes it more obvious what is necessary once you've done some work to cull it, sort it, prep it. You end up with a better answer. Marsha actually says something similar. She says she gets derailed when she hits papers that are keepsake papers of those who are gone. Then the quote is, "The emotions upend me." And that's another version of the story that I just told about my client, right? That your emotional response to what you find can sometimes shut you down. One of the ways that I cope with that for people is if they find something that's emotional and is threatening to distress them, that you put them aside in a box, like keep going through, and the ones that freak you out or upset you, put those to the side in a pile and then keep going. And then you can take that pile of emotional triggers, and that can be a separate project that you take out of the room where you're working, and another, either that day or another day, take that pile and one by one sit with them, go through them, feel the feelings you have, and then see if you can decide what to do with the piece of paper after you let yourself feel all the feelings you have around it. It's sort of like a sub project, right? To allow space to deal with the emotional stuff. And you can set it aside as a project that you do later. I'm going to deal with this card another day because it's going to stop me right now. So I'm not going to make a decision about it. I'm going to put it over here, and I'm going to take that stuff somewhere else later. PJ talks about Mount Doom. I thought Mount Doom was a great description. We all have a Mount Doom somewhere, and mine's in the garage right now. On the other side of her bed, away from where she gets into the bed. So it's like she stashes things there because she can't really see the stuff until it creeps up over the height of the bed. And then she's overwhelmed by how hard it will be to fix it because it's so big, right? And so then she has to like tackle this Mount Doom. Totally get that.
Well, and she described, I mean, it is Mount Doom in that doom sense, don't organize, only move sense that we've talked about. It's when
Right.
she's, you know, people are coming over, she's having, you know, having somebody, having company or a visitor or something, and
Right.
she throws a bunch of stuff in a box or a bag and sticks
Sticks it over there
over there where it starts piling up.
until she has to deal with it because it's taller than the bed. I just love that description. It was so awesome. Judy describes her bonus room as mostly that room is a valley of indecision and a heaving plateau of procrastination, which I thought was a perfect description. We a lot of us, at least in America, we have a lot of us have this spare room. It's a guest room, it's a bonus room, it's a, you know, and it's a room that maybe doesn't get used all the time, and then it becomes the in-home storage area. And it gets filled with a bunch of stuff. And the estate that I just did, that I just finished up in March, they had a bonus room that was upstairs that ran from the front to the back of the house. So it was double long. And there was a pool table in there. Like clearly it was supposed to be a game room, and it was probably a game room when the kids lived there. But since the kids had moved out and nobody was running around the game room anymore, it became the storage unit in the house. And so that room took so long to get out of because there was so much stuff in there. And that was where we found a lot of the stashed extra ancestors contents and boxes and pieces of luggage with stuff in them. Bonus rooms are definitely valleys of indecision, procrastination. A different Barbara talks about the problem in her back hallway that goes to the garage. She says the back door is a mixture of items going to the car, going to the garbage can, or going for garage placement. And she needs to organize the garage. And so the items linger and pile up until I can't get by them. I
Oh
can
dear.
see this in my mind so clearly. Like the door is a single door wide, and you got to be able to open the door. And then it's a hallway, which is not much wider than the door. And she's placing things there on the way out to the garage, and they never quite make it. And it would not take long to fill up that hallway and make it difficult to navigate. I can totally see that. And you know, that is definitely a that definitely needs a maintenance change about you can't stop in the hallway. You have to go the rest of the way. If it's trash, you have to go out the door, you have to do whatever you have to do to get to the trash can. And if the barriers to entry there are that it's hard to get in the garage or it's hard to get to the trash can, then you got to do at least enough. You don't have to organize the whole garage, but you got to do at least enough to make getting to the garbage can easy so that you can go and put things in the trash and you can go take things out for recycling or go put things in your car. You at least need a pathway that is clear so that you can do those things because clearly they're going to happen every day. Clearly you're filling it up every day. And so you got to be able to execute the second half of that. And waiting until you do the whole garage is clearly making you suffer right now. So do the portion that will allow you to deal with what's in the hallway first. Then that becomes less of a problem. And then you can do the garage when you have time to do the garage.
I want to interrupt you because you actually skipped over the first Barbara, and it's an important one.
Oh, I did?
I think you did, yes.
Oh, yes, I did. Look at that. Sorry. So the second Barbara, the first Barbara, that was the second Barbara. The first Barbara says she has so much paper everywhere that it's overwhelming. And that is repeated throughout our survey responses. Everybody says so much paper, completely overwhelmed. And so Barbara's paper problem is common amongst all of you. Everybody is suffering from that one. I see that a lot. You know, sometimes I think that I could spend all of my time as an organizer sorting people's paper, like, and never do anything else in the house. I could just sell myself as a paper organizer and I would never run out of business. Then we have a single mom, Amy. She's talking about that how easily it is, how easily tired she gets because she's a few years post chemo. And so I guess her energy level has been affected by that process. And her teenage sons are not really helping her keep the house clean. Not that I am surprised by that. Teenage sons, must enough said. She says, our house is a mess and affects both my sons and me. So what I thought when I read that one was, I think Amy needs to have a conversation with her kids about, you know, mother's energy is limited. We're all being affected by the state of the house. And the only way that it's going to get done is if you guys participate in helping me keep it up and, you know, support your mother in this way. Because, you know, expecting somebody who is recovering from that strong of a physical health challenge to do everything, like, yeah, sorry, your teenage son's with a mother who's recovering from cancer treatment. So your life is not like your friend's life. Y'all gotta step up and be helpful. Evelyn says that she has a wardrobe full of winter coats, electric cords, board games, and a sewing machine. But then she tells on herself and she says, but actually, I think it's because I don't want to get rid of any stuff. So her wardrobe is full of all these things that she really just doesn't want to get rid of things. And that's why it's so chaotic in there. We can all relate, right? Leslie commented the entryway with dog leashes, harnesses, and raincoats, for which she then blames the dogs. My dogs want to help and distract me. So I guess they count as the other distracting house members. Yes, they do. And I have to tell you, that happens with me on jobs a lot because the dogs, you know, they always want to be where the humans are. And
Right.
when I'm at somebody's place and I'm disrupting the environment, the dogs are like, "What you doing? What you doing? What you doing? Why is all this stuff moving around? And why does it make me sneeze? Because the dust is moving." Like, they want to be all up in it because it's new and different and interesting. And they also, you know, a lot of times I'm like, I'm kissing the dogs and hugging on the dogs. And so then when I meet them, I gush over them, and then I make it so I sort of set it up that then they come and interrupt me all the time because they know I'm going to kiss them. So they come and sit in my lap, and they come and beg for pets. And I'm like, yeah, I'm supposed to be organizing, but you're so cute. Let me rub your head. So I do, you know, I totally get that the dogs are distracting household family members, and they're little bundles of chaos that do not really understand the whole sort and organize concept. They're perfectly happy stepping through all of my piles and making a big mess of them. And like, yeah, they don't really help very much. All right. So those were some examples out of all of the great responses that we got in the survey about what kind of problem areas were happening for people. And I'm sure you all can relate to everyone that we said. So let's talk about the sweet spots now that people reported. That was very encouraging for me to see. And I want to say thanks that so many of you credited your success to the Clutter Fairy, and you thanked us for that. I really appreciate that kindness. I want to remind you that we just offered some ideas as possible solutions, and you all were the ones that actually implemented those solutions. So if you thanked us for something, you should also be very proud of yourself for making the change happen. And I'll say we make a really good team between us. And I'm glad that you were able to report in our section, in our survey, in that section, all of the great things you were able to accomplish. Jennifer, for instance, here's some, our examples. Jennifer says that she has a closet without a lot of clothes because she is very careful about the purchases. She buys things that last, made out of good fabric so that they will survive a bunch of washings. And she doesn't buy fast fashion because that stuff falls apart quickly. And then she buys things, she curates her clothes by buying things that mix and match, so there are more options that she can wear out of less pieces. And that's a good way to manage your closet and to keep the volume of your closet down. So good job, Jennifer. She also talked about that she pared down her keepsakes into one, I think, 12-gallon tote, she said. She lives in California, apparently, and the wildfires out there made her create a keepsake tote that so that she can grab it in 30 seconds and run. So she is managing her fear of the disaster that and loss that would come from a wildfire if it went close to her house. She had an experience where apparently a wildfire was very close to her, even though it didn't actually happen for her neighborhood. And so she was worried after the fact about, you know, I would have lost all of these keepsakes. So she went through and curated the collection and pared it down into one tote. And then if she's in a disaster, she grabs that tote and runs, and she knows she can keep her most valuable keepsakes. And so I thought that was a really successful report. That was a very great way to deal with it, and you know, great way to make it portable. Like, she's limiting it to the quantity to the container size that she can carry. And she went through and pulled out the cream of the crop, and so she managed to make it all fit into one container, and she's maintaining that container, which is really wonderful.
I want to share a quote. This is my favorite quote from this week's survey responses. This was part of Jennifer's explanation about her sentimental stuff. She says, "If everything is special, nothing is,"
Yes.
which I think is a good thing to keep running around, running through your head when you are, particularly when you are sorting mementos, keepsakes.
Yeah, right. And I think, you know, I also relate that to the idea of, you know, I need to keep everything out to remember it. Except that once you've got everything out, nothing is special anymore. It's all part of one big pile. So it really, that concept of if everything's special, nothing is, can be overlaid to all kinds of areas in your house and why the spaces become unmanageable. It's a good quote. Thank you, Jennifer. Hila, do you think it's Hila, Hila?
Yes, I believe so.
She talks about her clothes and kitchen stuff and medicine cabinet. And she says it's easy to see what I'm using and not using. So what isn't used goes out. And she's keeping a manageable quantity of items in use and finding a set space for what she's using. So she's looking at those, the clothes closet, the kitchen cabinets, the medicine cabinet, and she's keeping what she uses and letting go of what she isn't using. And that's a she's managed to incorporate that into three different areas, which is great. Summer talks about her car and says that she brings in stuff when she arrives home. So every time she comes home, she's taking things, all the things out of the car into the house. And so she's developed this routine of completing the process. You purchase it, and the purchases and the trash have to come from the car. Like they came from the store to the car, they have to come from the car to the house to complete that process. And so she has developed a routine that she does that every time she comes home, and therefore her car stays organized, which is great. And the purchases and the trash get in and get processed to go where they need to go the rest of the way. So that's really wonderful. Another survey taker said that they arrange the clothes in they so they organize the clothes in the closet and they arrange them by clothing type and color. So this person is using an organizing strategy in the closet that then they also maintain. So once they sort by type and color, then as they're doing laundry, the clothes go back in those sort by type and color areas. And so they're creating an organizing strategy in the closet, and then they're maintaining that as they, circle the laundry through. And so they're successfully organize the closet and maintaining the closet at the same time, which is great. Marsh talked about the car and house keys and says that she can always find them because I put the keys in the same place every time I come into the house. And so that's Marsh incorporating the concept of an important item having a parking space. And she's got the parking space right, I think, right close to the door where she comes in. And she always puts the keys in the same place. And now she doesn't have that, panic, oh my God, where are my keys moment every time she needs to leave the house. So that's a successful habit that she's added in by creating a parking space for the keys. PJ's has a similar launching pad at the front door concept. So she's got a launching pad there, and she has stations for her three different coats, a station for the keys and lip balm. She has something containing the walking sticks and the umbrellas. She has a place where she parks reusable shopping bags. And so all of those things are ready when she's leaving the house. It's by the door. And she did mention that if it wasn't all in parking space, designated parking spaces by the door, she knows she would forget something to take with her. And so
Right.
this allows her to have all the things that she wants to go out with her when she leaves the house. And the three coats was like a winter coat and a rain coat. And it was three different types depending on the weather. And so she's prepared for the things that she wants to take with her when she leaves the house. And they have parking spaces. So again, she's setting parking spaces, and she doesn't have anything else in the parking spaces but the things that she wants to take out with her when she leaves through the front door. So great design. So you're organizing and creating those parking spaces. There was containers involved, like the walking sticks and umbrellas were in a tall container on the floor. So they have a place to sit. The shopping bags were hanging in a specific place. The coats were hanging in a specific place. And so she had created containers or hooks or whatever for all these things to be. And so it's working when she goes out the front door, which is great. Oh, I didn't capture the name on this one. Someone else is talking about their kitchen counter, and they clear the kitchen counter every night so that it's easy to cook. So they're using a maintenance routine and they're clearing every night. And they're doing that in support of their desire for cooking to be easy. So they want it to be something that, they want to be able to come in and start cooking right away and not have to clean before they cook. And so they've created that maintenance routine that when they leave at night, when they go through the kitchen and make sure the counter's cleared off so that it's a clear space ready to go when they start the next day. So that's a great habit, a great maintenance routine that you've adopted there. PJ's talking about her bathroom. She says there's no choice to clear it, but to clear it because it's too small. So she's maintaining by the container principle And the container being the small bathroom walls, right? The small little room. It's too easy to crowd it up, and it's really easy to keep it tidy regularly if there's not very much in there. So she's sort of a, it's a large container, but it is, she's using the fact that the bathroom walls are her limit and there's not that much space in there. And if she wants to be able to use the bathroom, it's got to stay clear. So she's letting that container define what stays in there so that she can keep using the bathroom. Diane talks about the kitchen as well, and she says that she clears as she goes. While she's cooking, she's clearing things up as she goes along. And then also, when she's tempted to leave it overnight, she reminds herself how she'll feel waking up to a mess versus waking up to a clean start. So Diane has developed a regular maintenance routine that she clears as she goes. That's just great. And then she makes sure that it's all clear before she goes to bed. And then she's also using the concept of visualization when she wants to, when she feels like she wants to break her maintenance routine. Like, oh God, I'm so tired. I don't want to do the dishes, right? We all have that moment. I had it last night. Sometimes I look at the cat dishes like, I don't really want to clean the cat dishes. I'm ready to go to bed. But I clean the cat dishes because when I'm half asleep and I'm trying to do the cats, I sure don't want to be cleaning the cat dishes then. So she's visualizing what she wants to happen when, you know, she's, I want it to be easy and a clean start when I come in the morning. I don't want to wake up to a mess. So she remembers that she sees the future possibility and she aims for that. And that convinces her to do her regular maintenance routine, even when she feels like she would rather skip it. So good two techniques there. C talks about the family room and says that nothing's allowed on the furniture in case visitors come over. So her surfaces are no man's land with a house rule that nothing can go there. And so, and she, it sounds like she circles through and checks, and she's enrolled the family members in it as well. And so they've designated some rules about this room, nothing on the furniture, the end. What if somebody comes over? And they focus to maintain that. So that's great. That's a good job. M talks about her makeup in a pretty box that's the size of a cigar box. So again, she's using the container method, all of her makeup fits inside the box. And she only replaces something when she runs out. So, you know, the eyeshadow gets replaced or the mascara gets replaced when she runs out. Or she decides that it's been long enough that it's appropriate to replace it. And so she throws one away and go gets a new one. And the container is pretty enough that it encourages her to put everything back in the box and close the box up so she can see the box. So if everything's out on the counter and the lid's off, then she doesn't get to enjoy the box. But if she puts everything away in the container and closes the box, then she gets the reward of looking at a pretty thing that she likes. And so she's using that container and the fact that if she, you know, hides it, she gets pretty decor to look at as her sort of triggers to keep her makeup in c under control.
I want to share a great comment from M, who's with us live in Zoom.
I am.
She says, I learned from the survey that my sweet spots are the areas where I analyzed intended uses and very carefully set up the areas to work for me. Areas that are cluttered either accept overflow too easily or never underwent analysis for their specific use.
Yes, right.
That is a
That
terrific insight. And
is
it,
excellent to figure that out.
well, and you can kind of see it even just well in the sweet spots we've described so far. There are some common themes, which are the space provides a constraint, or
Yes.
I have used containers that create constraints. There are systems in place, and then there
For
are
maintenance and
habits and routines to support those systems. You know, I do this every day. I always keep this here.
exactly.
These are the commonalities.
And the end result of a successful organizing of that area.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Pam made comments about her collection of postcards and said that she sorted all the postcards into categories so it's easy to enjoy them and it's also easy to put them away. So she's using an organizing structure to make the collection manageable, which is that she's sorting them into categories. She's creating the types, the buckets of types of cards that she likes. And then she's taking things out of the system to enjoy them and replacing them in the system back when, so she can keep finding them again. So the organizing categories helped, and sorting them into those categories made it easier for her to pull out what she wants and put it away. And that structure in one box of postcards, she has one box of postcards. It's a big box, I'm guessing, based on the number of categories she had. So it's sort of, it sounded like it was one of those lifelong, either I've been collecting on all my trips, or I've been collecting in my, I inherited some postcards too. And so it must have been a large, varied collection that she needed to manage. And she's done it by sorting it out into categories. And then that makes it work for her. And she can enjoy them and pull them out and play with them and put them back, which is the biggest part. Barbara talks about her drawers in her kitchen and the drawers in the bath and the desk in the craft room. And she says the contents do not grow out of the container. And what she means by that is the drawer. And she rarely adds to the contents, and she uses what's there. So again, the contents have a specific parking space, which is the drawer. And that drawer is organized and it doesn't get overstuffed. She's using that container to not, you know, she's not adding content. So she's using what's there and it's sorted. And so the kitchen has one kind of stuff, the bat, like every each of those rooms she talked about, they have designated drawers with stuff in them, but the contents stay within the drawer size and she uses what's there. And so then it has a parking space. If she's not through using it, it goes back in the drawer. And so that's a system that's working for her in the drawers. I didn't capture this one. This may be an anonymous one. The incoming mail, handling the incoming mail. So they're opening the mail as it comes in the house and discarding trash and recycling right away at the door. There's apparently she's got some cans in the vicinity of the front door. And so she barely gets in the house before she's throwing things away and putting things in recycling. So she's just developed that habit, that maintenance mode around the mail, which is great. That means she can stay ahead of it. That is very good. And you know, there's always something you have to keep, but I'm guessing that she also has systems around where those things should go. Peggy talks about this. I thought this was interesting. Peggy's talking about a collection of her husband's stuff. And she has corralled it on a large metal tray that's on top of a bookcase. So it's out of sight to her, but it must be visible to him. I'm guessing she's shorter than her husband and he can see the tray, but she can't see the tray. And so it's better for her in that it's not as visually stimulating to her. And she's designated parking space, which is the tray on top of the bookcase. And the tray is the container that she's designated to control the collection. And so I'm guessing this is, you know, his wallet, his keys, his watch, his the things that, you know, get collected and offloaded out of pockets every night. And so they go up there in a pile and then he can see them and retrieve them as he needs them. So that was cool. And you know, I love that it was a parking space in a container that's out of her visual range, so that it's not triggering for her. So she took care of herself and she took care of him. And hopefully he is comfortable with where the tray is. I'm just gonna go with it. I'm just gonna go that he likes it too. She didn't specifically say that, but I'm gonna assume. Christine talked about her successful use of a whole bunch of the backs of her doors in various rooms with overdoor organizer pockets. So everything that she puts in the pockets can be easily seen and used and restocked, put back. Things can be, she talks about that she can take the hangers down and hide them in a closet if company stays over. I'm guessing that the pockets are facing out into the room right now while she uses them. But if somebody comes over, she can easily transfer their position so that they're not available to company to see, which makes it easy to. The system works for you, and you don't have to show it to people that come in the house.
Yeah, and it's only one thing to move. And yeah, I'm guessing these are, over doors that are kept open most of the time, and when company stays over, your guest room door is going to get closed at night, or
Yeah, and there it'll be,
when they
right?
need privacy.
And so the containers itself, the pockets, set that that's the container boundary, right? Like you can't have more than a pocket will hold. If you have, you know, 9 pockets or 12 pockets or whatever many pockets, that's your storage area. That's how much space that you have. And so the container defines the quantity. And she's also, using what's there and then restocking after somebody gets used up. So she's not trying to manage a bunch of back stock. She's just continuing, using what she has and then replacing it as it goes away. So a bunch of things happening there for Christine, which is great. The last one I put on here is Janice, who talked about her laundry room, and she says that everything has a place so the supplies can come down and be used and they go back in place. And she felt like it was really functional and easy for her to do the laundry. And I think it was Janice that also said she's regularly wiping down the washer and dryer and occasionally like going inside and cleaning the drum on the inside too. And that it makes a huge difference in how the machines are working. So she was really proud of how functional and useful the laundry room was working for her. Great job. And you can tell that you guys were consistently, you're using a lot of the same techniques and tools adapted to all kinds of places in the house, and is really making it, you're really happy with living with the results of those sweet spots that you set up. So let them inspire you to make the rest of the house sweet spots. It could be possible that everywhere would feel that way for you. And so if you've had an experience of a successful result somewhere, and now's the time to go copy and paste into some other part of the house. Go do the same process in another part of the house and see if you can't get the result in more than one place.
Or
And thank you for sharing your results. They were really great to read.
as M suggested, analyze, then copy and paste. Take a look at how take a look at how you're using the space, how you would like to be using the space, and so forth.
And what you feel successful and comfortable doing and maintaining. I mean, you're also learning about how, what kinds of organizing techniques work for you and which ones don't. And so figuring out what of that process, what of those system options is one that you're willing to do, that you can do, that is you're not super resistant to, is important as well.
Okay,
Good job, you guys.
we are just about out of time. We will be back next week at the usual time, and we're going to do another Ask Us Anything episode. And the focus next week is going to be little questions. We frequently will find two or three short topics to cover from, when people have suggested a topic that we don't really feel like we can talk about for a whole episode. But next week, we're going to go for a whole lot of the little questions that are hopefully shorter answers, so we can answer more of your questions because we have a
All
large
at once.
backlog of questions.
Okay.
Do you want to give us the tittle?
Yes, this week's tittle is called Tweak a Problem Area. So this week's assignment is to apply a strategy or solution from today's episode to one of your clutter problem areas. Identify a problem area in the home, a physical space, a category of stuff, or a collection of items that you find difficult to keep clear of clutter. And design a small habit, a daily routine, or a recurring practice to start getting this problem area under control. For example, you can establish a reset routine to scan the area for items that don't belong there and return them to their rightful homes. You can stop accumulation of new stuff in this area category of collection by choosing a container to serve as the limiting factor for what can go here. You'll probably need to cull items from the area to fix the content to fit the container in at first. And so plan a separate short-term project to deal with the excess. Then set a threshold for controlling what else can be added to the area, such as a one in, one out rule. And then practice your new habit or routine for a few weeks. Be prepared to make further adjustments as you become accustomed to living with less stuff in the area, and as you also uncover the things that make you resistant or the things that work so that you can modify what you're doing so that it's something that you are comfortable doing and willing to do. That's important as well. And then come back and tell us about it next week.
All right, if you're watching this on YouTube, we would love for you to join us live. To get notifications about upcoming events, we invite you to join the meetup group. by visiting cfhou.com/meetup. You can also follow us on Facebook by visiting cfhou.com/facebook, or join our mailing list by visiting cfhou.com/subscribe. We also got a reminder from a YouTube viewer who suggested that we ask you, those of you who are watching us on YouTube, to be sure to like the video and subscribe if you're not already subscribed. And of course, to recommend our videos to friends if you feel so inclined. We'd love to grow our YouTube viewership even larger.
That would be awesome. Thank you for doing that. And we appreciate you coming to listen to you every week.
We'd love to hear from you, so please keep your questions, comments, and topic suggestions coming on YouTube, Facebook, or anywhere that you find us. You can always reach us through our website at clutterfairhouston.com.
Thanks, everybody, for joining us this week. We appreciate you. And we will see you next week when we're back for the next round of a whole bunch of little bitty questions. And hope